Bobbig.
Oh je. Soll ich Sakko noch anziehen? Oder bist du übertrieben, oder? Meinst du? Okay, so, hello everyone, to this talk on composable components, that's composable UI components. So we're talking about user interfaces in the modern style, such as with things like React or Angular or these sorts. My name is, as this other guy just said, Markus Schlegel, and I'm a software architect at Active Group. Now, as for my motivation, what do I want to talk about? Well, composition. Well, don't we all want to talk about composition? And of course, I want to talk about reuse. And well, to be absolutely precise, I don't want to talk about composition and reuse. I want to talk about composability and reusability. There's a slight difference. I hope that will be clear during the talk. Will become clear, that is. Now, there's a lot of talk about composability and reusability and composition and reuse, but I think there's an underlying concept that's not talked about that much, which is that, well, code changes, and so there's movement of code, and just like saying it like that, it sounds obvious. Like, we all know that code is not like there's no static project that's ever done, right? But I don't think we always get all the consequences of what that means, right? Of the movement of code. And so I want to be a bit more explicit on that during my talk. Now, to drop a small Karl Marx quote on you, this is a quote from the first volume of Capital, where Karl Marx talks about his scientific method. And he's analyzing, well, as you all know, Karl Marx analyzed capitalism with a special method, which he called the dialectical materialism. And he characterizes dialectics as something like this quote. He says that we have to regard every developed form as in fluid movement, and therefore take into account its transient nature not less than its momentary existence. And of course, this all sounds like totally obvious, but well, as Karl Marx showed in Capital Volume 1, the consequences are not that obvious, and they are quite consequential indeed. And so I want to take that very same method and apply it to code and programming. You might think, well, could there be any two things further apart than programming and social relations like in capitalism? And I think, yes, it is quite close, actually, because programming, after all, is also a social activity. But to move a bit further to the ground and get a firmer grasp on reality, let's first talk about what I mean with the term composability, for the sake of this talk, at least. So, as we all know, we're functional programmers, right, at Active Group, especially, and I think Bob Conf shows that we like to talk about functional programming with others as well. So, of course, I have to start with a function. And this is a simple, pure function. This is JavaScript, but doesn't really matter what language this is, or what the arguments work in any language. So in JavaScript, you define a function like that, and it's got a name, right? It's inc, and it takes a value x, and it returns x plus 1. So it increments integers. So it's as basic as it can get. But there's not something underneath here, right? So we don't just do functions, right? There's usually a problem that we want to solve. And the problem behind this solution, which you can see here, is that we want to increment integers. But problems, they have the tendency, at least in our business, to change. And of course, for the sake of this talk, the problem changes also. We don't want to increment integers anymore. We want to do something similar, but not quite the same. We want to take tuples of integers, so two integers now, and we want to increment them part, like each part. And as you can see, I added something to the slide in the middle, and that's a new snapshot of our code base. And as I said, I want to draw attention to the movement of code, and that's why I display them side by side, these two snapshots, like the first one that we saw in the beginning. It solved a very specific problem, and in the middle we had to change something, we had to add something to be precise, to fit the new problem description, right? The solution has to follow the problem, which is quite obvious. But we can see it does follow the problem in quite a specific way, because we didn't have to change anything per se, we just added something. We just added another function, excuse me, another function. Of course, it needs a new name, inktuple. And we reused the old function as is, so we didn't have to change the old function. And that makes sense, because the two problems that we had, incrementing an integer and incrementing a tuple, are they have a combined, like, unified kernel inside, which is like incrementing stuff. And so we would like to follow that property in our solution as well. Like, we want to have a common kernel that's not supposed to change much, right? And that's why we can reuse functions. That's what we want to do, right? We want to analyze the movement of code and simplify things in the movement. And of course, we're not done now. Always be composing. So the problem again could change slightly, could get bigger still. And it's quite a contrived example now, but you get the idea. We still only have to add something, another function, if the problem allows for such a style. And that's basically all that's inside of the, like, that. That's basically all that the term composition of functions says, right? You want to combine small functions to build large functions. That's a common theme in functional programming. But functions are, well, they're not boring per se, but they're quite well understood, I would say. But we want to have the same benefits that we get with function composition with the composition of other things. And one of the things I want to draw focus on in this talk is UI components, of course. We want to have composable components, yes. And so the composition of UI components is simply that: combine small components to build large components. And it's important that we not just want to combine them in any way, but we want to combine them without changing the smaller parts, right? Ideally, if the problem allows. And we can have a look at the current state of the art with React in this case. This is a React, they call it function components, function component, and we're using these hooks, right? You see this use state that's called a hook, and that's what makes it not really a function anymore. It looks like a function from the outside, function counter, right? But there's stuff going on inside which makes them only sort of pure in a very broad sense, so not in a pure functional sense. And now what this counter does is, well, it counts, right? It displays a button with a label that's a number, and when I click the button, then it increments the number and I can do it again and again. So simple problem again. I think it's maybe one of the most simplest components you can come up with. And the implementation that you see here is reasonable, right? It works, so it fulfills the specification of the problem. And it's reasonably short, so, well, arguably you couldn't do much better. So just to go into the details a bit, for those who don't know React that well, so as I said, this use state is a special construct. It basically says that you have a state, and you can get two things out of this call of use state, which is the current state. So React has this idea of a rendering, and the state here refers to the current value of the state in the current rendering. And then you have set state, which is basically the writing part of the state, so an update. And then you say return. That's a bit strange syntax in my opinion, but anyway, you display a button like this. This should look like HTML, and you have an onClick handler, and in the onClick handler you call the set state, so the write with the state plus one. So again, you increment a value, and then of course the button needs to display something, so that's this state right here. That's just the current counter value. Now, as I said, this is fine. It's not like it fulfills all the needs, but when a problem changes, we get into, well, problems, because now the diff, like you see again, the before and after, and I made these little annotations with pluses and hash signs. Before, with functions, we only had pluses, so we only had to add something, and what we already written down, we could just leave it, like that was fine, right? But now that's not anymore. Not the case anymore, because in order to solve a larger problem, we almost always have to adapt a solution for the smaller problems. In this case, we now want to display two counters, so a counter for a tuple of two integers, and of course we have to add a new component. That's the part down here now. Do you see my mouse? Yes. Okay. So that's fine. There's something has to be done, right? Can't really change much about this. But this part up here, as you can see, a lot has changed. What we did was we made. Oh, okay. There's a step in between. I'll come back to that. What we did was we made this counter a controlled component. That's a term in React. And the control component is basically characterized by, well, it doesn't manage its own state. It has a value and on change prop, so argument passed to it, and it has to display the current value in some fashion, and has to call this on change whenever it wants to update its controlled state. Okay, let's go back to these things. Okay, so the problem statement also includes, for again, to make my argument a bit more airtight, is that we want to also display the sum of our tuple values, right? That's going to be here, and that's the reason why we need the use state thingy in this larger component, right? If it were down in the small counter component, we couldn't access it. We couldn't compute a sum. So that's why we need the values up here. That's why we need to change things. The use state is now in the two counters component. And again, we get a state and a set state, and we call them accordingly. As I said, the counter has to become a control component, right? There's no way around it. And we use a control component by, well, passing down these two values, value and on change. The value for the first counter component is going to be the first part of the tuple, which is referred to by the state identifier here. And the on change is just basically going to be a shove into the first part of the tuple, and the second part stays the same. So this basically, this says it stays the same, right? And we get a new XX, so a new updated first part, and we just put it where it belongs. And the same, but sort of mirrored, is happening in the other counter component. So we can place two counters here, pass them their appropriate values, and we're done, right? But we had to make this appear a controlled component in order for this to work. But it's getting worse and worse the larger our programs get. So we're not done yet, of course. Always be composing. There's now this contrived 2-2 counters, which we want to use the two counters for that. So we have a tuple of tuples, I should say that. Tuple of tuples. But we can't, because it's not a controlled component. We have to make that a controlled component in order to use it. And so the diff looks really, really bad. We have to change a lot of stuff. And now my face is in a way, but I highlighted these lines again. You can see that what we do whenever we use a controlled component is a bit cumbersome. There's a lot of, it looks a bit dense, even though what we do is, when I want to describe it in words, in simple words, it's really easy, right? We want to sort of focus on the first component of a tuple here in this part, and we want to focus on a second part of a tuple down here. And focusing means take the value of the first part, and when you have an update, you put it in the first place, in the first part, right? And in the second accordingly. Now whenever we have a lot of complicated code, and we are able to verbalize what's going on in much simpler terms, in functional programming, that means it's a code smell, because we have all these great tools at our hand to not have to verbalize and write it down in a comment, or write it in a README, or tell it via speech to a coworker. We can just write an abstraction, or write something down that captures the essence of what's happening here. And that's what we are now gonna try to do. And in order to be able to do that, we need to talk about lenses. I already alluded to, maybe you noticed, two lenses by saying we need to focus on a specific part of a larger structure. That's basically what lenses do. I tried to visualize what lenses do in this picture right here. So you see an arrow pointing from a larger structure into a substructure of this large structure. And this arrow is what represents a lens, what a lens does. You can think about a lens as an arrow. It's not quite right if you get if you think more about it, but for the sake of this talk, you can think about it as a simple arrow into something. And a store you might not be familiar with, especially because I think I made that term up myself. And a store for me, or for this talk, is a lens plus a large data structure packaged together, right? So so in this case, this orange arrow packaged together with this blue larger pentagon, I think it is, that would mean you have a store. And lenses allow for sort of reading and writing, and they compose, and so our stores follow the composition and semantics of lenses roughly, and so they so hopefully they also compose in the end. In order to make them worth anything, we need a few operations on our stores, and the first one is a simple read, and try to visualize it again with these shapes. Read of such a store is just the part that's pointed to in the larger structure, right? So read would give you the smaller square in this case. Excuse me. And as the headline suggests, there's also writing. So we have an overhaul function which takes a store and returns a store, but not like it's almost the same store. The output is almost the same store as the input, except for the part that's pointed to by the lens. That's replaced by a function that we also put into overhaul. So the function maps the square to a star, and so the output is the larger structure as is, but the arrow now points to a star. So there was a replacement going on. And it's not just reading and writing, it's composable reading and writing, so we need a combinator. And the combinator that we want is basically a lens composition, sequential lens composition. So imagine a lens as an arrow. You can just take two arrows and put them end to end, and they form a larger arrow. That's, well, just the path these two arrows follow. And again, a little visualization. We have an orange arrow pointing at some structure inside a larger structure, and then we have red arrow that's pointing again at an even larger, even smaller structure inside this this square. And so if we want to focus this store with this smaller lens, then we get another store that's basically the old one, but with a lens composition going on inside of it. And now we want to try out our new notion of lenses and stores. We write a little, very, very tiny library with this idea. And I can show you, but it's really bad and only like 20 lines. Instead, we want to just look at an example, like how would we use such an API that's based on the idea of stores and lenses. And again, we have this problem of the counter. We want to have a button that's displaying that displays a value, and whenever we click it, it's going to be incremented. And with the new idea of the stores and lenses, the implementation would look like something like this. Now, first of all, we have to have a convention, or what is it called? Like we have to agree on something in that we now need to have stores passed as an argument to every component that we want to write, right? And that's going to be this store keyword right here. And this store now represents a value that the component is about, right? So you can think of a UI component as managing some data. And the data is, in this case, represented by the store. A UI lets the user read look at the data, and it also lets the user manipulate the data. And that's what we do here with the overhaul and read, right? So instead of you, as before, we were calling set state calling set state, for example, we now use our overhaul with the store that we're given and a function that increments an integer, right? In this on-click handler right here. In this on-click handler. And displaying the value, well, we already learned that you can get to the current value of a store by calling read. Now, as we saw, read store, overhaul store, and a function. And now we want to change the problem again, right? We had a single counter, single integer that's going to be incremented. And now we want to move to a larger problem, that is two two counters for a tuple of two values. And now, of course, the diff looks much better because this counter that we wrote in the first installment was already composable, right? Because we followed this one convention, is that a right word? of passing a store object. And well, we couldn't do anything else than overhauling or reading with it. So we did that, and that already makes it composable. And we see why that is when we look at our combinator, of course, the focus function. In that, for the two counters component, we of course also get a store, right? That's our rule. Now this store, it represents the value of the two counters component. So it doesn't represent a single integer, it represents a tuple of two integers. And so we can't just pass this store down to the two counters that counter button components that we want to display. That would be wrong, right? They would like read something and display a strange tuple. That would maybe work, but this update of x plus one doesn't make a sense for doesn't make any sense for tuples, right? So we have to manipulate the store that we're given in some way, and the only way we can transform stores is our combinator. And so we call our combinator, and well, what do we want to do? We want to focus on a specific part, and this right here must be a lens. So I invented some lens library here, and the lens library, it comes with a set of standard lenses, and this standard lens right here, it's a lens into an array structure. So into the zeroth component of an array in this case. So we just focus on this part and pass down the store that's falling out of this function invocation. And then in the other installment, we just use a different lens, right? We want to focus on the second part of the tuple. So we use a different lens, slightly different lens, and pass the result down to the other counter. And this works, right, if you have the proper library behind there. And we're also not done, of course. Always be composing. There's an even larger problem probably waiting around a corner. And if the problems do have a common kernel, then in this style, you hopefully don't have to change much again. So, in summary, composable components, what did we do here in this talk? Well, we kept an eye on the movement of code. That was sort of our method. I didn't go into the details during the later part of the talk much, but we always saw that we had these like different snapshots of the same code base, we could say. And the interesting parts happen in the diffs between two snapshots. And I think we can only really understand what software engineering is if we think about the movement of code and not just of static, like give me a to-do MVC implementation and I can only tell you like some minor details about it, but you should give me the progression of a to-do application in order for me to judge, if the underlying programming model is compositional or not, or is adequate or not. Then composability allows for lossless reusability. That's sort of what our method told us by looking at a certain instance of a part of programming, which is UI component front-end programming, quite a large part these days. And in this specific case of UI components with React, we notice that controlled components are composable. That's quite nice, and they're therefore reusable, but they're sort of cumbersome and they don't really express the essence of what's going on. You have to always pass down these value and unchanged thingies. They obviously have to fit together, right? You can't just do completely random stuff there. But this controlled component style doesn't allow you to express the essence of what's going on. And that's what lenses, and in this case stores, are for. They allow for lossless composability, as these control components do, but they don't have this contrived, like cumbersome whale around them. And that's basically all I wanted to tell you, except here's a little to-do list for you. This talk is sort of based on a very old idea by Connell Elliott. I think this talk that I link to right here is from 2006 or something. And Connell Elliott, he argues that components, or in his case, UIs, graphical user interfaces, are tangible values. He wants to, he's interested in what these things are, right? And he argues that they're tangible values, and there's a lot of interesting properties falling out of this insight. And well, if you're interested in JavaScript lenses in JavaScript, this is the lens library that I used for this very, very small example. I cannot really say anything good or bad about it. It's just the first that I found that has an identity lens. So, right. And of course, the most important one is this thing right here. That's a closure script library, React-C. That's sort of this idea of composable components taken to the like 3,000 steps more than what I just showed you. There's a lot more going on there, but the basic idea is the same. So you have these tangible values, you have these composable components, and a lot of reusability falls out of that. Thank you.